Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting from our studios in New York City. I'd like to welcome you. Today, we begin with the latest on health and healing, including lose the weight, not the potatoes. Chocolate also ensures against stroke risk. Alpha lipoic acid improves glucose uptake, lowers blood sugar, and neutralizes free radicals. You've heard me mention that there is no such thing as being overweight and healthy. It cannot happen. It is an impossibility. Though we like to deceive ourselves, this is just one more study, University of California, Los Angeles. Being overweight accelerates liver aging. And 9 fall foods to fight your fall allergies from Organic Gardening. Then from our environmental segment, we're going to look at California charged with rubber stamping pesticides linked to bee deaths. Then also, I'm going to take a look today at the cancer danger in the GMO fields. Darian Arando has an article on that. We're also going to look at the fact that the water is rising even faster than what anyone anticipated, something brand new from Australia. And I received a lot of feedback. The latest was last evening when I was up getting a juice for my evening. I make myself a berry slush. I put some ice, then raspberries. Last night it was raspberries, blackberries, blueberries, and a little tiny seeds of pomegranate. And then I put some lemon juice in, peel the apple for about 5 apple skins. I keep then juice the apple. And I blend that. Don't juice it, I blend it. And that's a delicious evening tonic. It's healing. It thins the blood, helps prevent stroke. It repairs the DNA. It helps prevent cancer from metastasizing if you have it. It floods the brain and helps eliminate a lot of the amyloid plaque, so it's really good for Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. And it helps lower blood sugar, but it also satisfies your appetite. That means that if you have that, let's say, at 6 o'clock, you're not going to be hungry for the rest of the evening. So anyhow, I was having my juice, and this person came over and said, "Did you see them? Program on 60 Minutes. I said, "No, I didn't. I heard about it." Well, they had these doctors on talking about how costly it is to fight cancer and that it's really about the profit of these drugs, like $100,000 a year per drug. I said, "I'm aware that there are even more expensive drugs. One drug is $133,000 per year." And I said, "But that's not the story. Good that they did that. I have no problem with that. But that's not the story. The real story is that we will never allow a non-patented cure for cancer or even anything that would improve the immune system. It's a racket. It's an industry. It is corrupt top to bottom. Well-intentioned people participate in it. Family members believe that they're saving a family member, a mother, a father, a child, by not questioning the doctor, almost idolizing the doctor, as if this oncologist, this cancer expert, surely knows so much that we don't know, and therefore who am I to question them? Big mistake. Because the number one reason that people are dying of cancer is not because of malignant cells. It's because of our belief system. And everything that we did prior to the cancer being diagnosed, and including how unfortunate our cancer treatments are for 80% of all cancers. So I'm going to address that today in our special public health commentary. Let's begin. And tomorrow I intend to do a program on the CIA working with the American Psychological Association's War on Terror, where there some of the psychologists belonging to it were the ones that actually created the enhanced interrogation techniques. Well, hold on a second. to the American Psychological Association, the largest professional organization of psychologists, say, quote, "We work assiduously to protect the psychologist." Yeah, you did. You protect them from not getting involved in the torture program. And didn't you also say that, quote, "The position of the American Psychological Association is clear and unequivocal. For more than 25 years, the association has absolutely condemned any psychologist's participation in torture." Yes, you said it. But you didn't tell the truth. Tomorrow, we will reveal your comments from your emails showing how, well, people who participated in the torture, psychologists, were then protected and it was covered up. Oh, and by the way, tomorrow, you didn't know this, that the CIA, according to documents from Edward Snowden and the National Security Agency, they want to track your psychological and lifestyle traits. For example, your sexual preferences, your extroversion or introversion, whether you're a leader or follower. They want to know everything about your psychology. Why? Why would they want a psychological profile of every single person in America? Evidently, they already have it. Who gave them permission? No one. We'll talk about it tomorrow. Now we're going to talk about 9 foods that help you with allergies. Now, of course, the best way of helping yourself with allergies is to strengthen your immune system. In fact, right now we have an allergy program, an allergy study group going on with about 80 people for 3 months, and really simple. You could do this at home. The first part you could do at home. The individual counseling is a little different, but here's what you could do. Eliminate all known allergens and those that are highly probable. Peanuts, roasted nuts, soy. Also, get rid of all dairy in any form, all animal products in any form, deep frying, trans fats, coffee, pesticides on produce, so you got to eat organic, and artificial sweeteners. And watch your immune system come back, and as immune system goes up, allergy responses go down. You'll see a direct relationship. The more you do to detoxify, the greater your immune competence and the less likely you are to suffer from illnesses. So that's important. Then on top of that, there are nutrients you can certainly take to enhance your immune system, but broccoli has to be at the top of the list. Now, I don't recommend you juicing broccoli because you're going to spend a lot of money and get very little juice. Better that you eat broccoli sprouts. Broccoli sprouts give you a lot of vitamin C, and about 500 milligrams, by the way, is what you need for basic allergy response. You can go much higher to get more of that. You get about 80 milligrams of vitamin C in 1 cup of broccoli. So you're not going to get your vitamin C from broccoli, but you can certainly get it from other cruciferous vegetables as well, including kale, cauliflower, Swiss chard. But the broccoli sprouts is really an immune enhancer. Kale's just the hottest thing right now because it's being dried, generally at around 110 degrees overnight, and then they sprinkle different seasonings on it, everything from curry to different peppers. So it's a delicious item, very tasty, real rich in allergy-improving nutrients, the carotenoids mainly. And collard greens. Now, most people don't eat collard greens because they're a little chewy. And in the South, they boil them forever. I think they boil them for 4 years, and then they serve it to you. And it still tastes something like an inner tube. But it's great for hay fever. So collard greens, I definitely suggest you juice. Then you get the full phytonutrient content. And that really helps when you have, let's say, 2 ounces of collard greens in a diluted juice, meaning your dilution is generally celery, cucumber, and apple. And it's really good for you. Onions and garlic, they're packed with quercetin. quercetin, Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N. Take it in half the amount you take your vitamin C. So if you take 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C, take 500 milligrams of quercetin at the same time. It makes it more bioactive. And why? Because onions and garlic are natural antihistamine nutrients. So you want to quell the inflammation in your sinuses, around your eyes, and the stuffy nose, the red cheeks. Quercetin does that. On its own, I generally recommend people start at 1,000 milligrams of quercetin and go up in divided doses. This is pumpkin time, so like broccoli and green vegetables, pumpkins are rich in carotenoids, and you can make a great pumpkin sauce, much like applesauce. You can dry pumpkin. There's a lot you can do. I don't recommend juicing pumpkin, but pumpkins are easy to prepare. You can steam them and then make them into like a mashed potato, except they're made into like a pumpkin. You can add cranberries to them. Tastes really good. Carrots are great as a powerhouse of carotenoids that helps your immune system. And I always like to take coconut oil with carrots. That's a really good combination. And like, let's say you might steam some carrots and then baste them in coconut and then put seasonings on that. That's tasty. Celery's up there. Stinging nettle is... nettle is not a food. It's an herb. It's very good for helping with inflammation. And stinging nettle contains histamine. And that's the chemical that helps your body deal with allergies. Generally, you get 500 milligram freeze-dried nettle capsules. That's the best way of getting it. And then have those in different combinations in a day, and that'll help you. It makes a difference. And also, alpha-lipoic acid, very, very good. Let's say 200 to 600 milligrams a day. Always good to take alpha-lipoic acid before you go to bed at night, because it works in your body at night. It helps thin the blood. It's the great, great detoxifier, right up there with reduced glutathione. It's anti-inflammatory. It's good if you have diabetes, hypertension, vascular disease, cognitive decline, musculoskeletal disorders. It is a superstar of nutrients. It is as good as it gets, along with glutathione, which is your single most important nutrient in the body as far as antioxidants. And it's good for diabetes. And chocolate ensures against stroke risk. This is from the Daily Messenger, quote, women who eat chocolate, a bar, every week could cut their stroke risk by 20%. This is a study based upon 33,000 Swedish women who ate the most chocolate but had the lowest chance of stroke. And that's good. Eat the healthy chocolate. This was done at the Karolinska Institute in Stockholm, and that was is a great scientific research center. I suggest eating 2 to 4 ounces of raw or healthy chocolate per day. And finally, you've heard me mention time and again that being overweight is dangerous. Now, that does not mean that you will necessarily test and find that you have high blood pressure or clogged arteries. But your body is processing disease for the mere fact that you are overweight, and you're accelerating the aging of your telomeres, which are the end caps of your chromosome. Just visualize a telomere as the end of a shoestring, that little band that keeps from unraveling. That's what the telomeres do. When you're overweight, you accelerate the aging of the telomeres. That's just one thing you do. This is in the University of California. This is published in the most respected scientific journal in America, the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Here's what it says, quote, obesity has been linked to increased risk of heart disease, type 2 diabetes, and even cancers. Now, for the first time, researchers claim that obesity also speeds up the aging of the liver. A research team headed by a professor of human genetics at David Geffen School of Medicine, University of California, says their study could explain why obese individuals often experience early onset of some age-related disease like diabetes and liver cancer. So, let's do all that we can in the way of diet and exercise to keep our body weight down. Good news, we have had a substantial reduction in allergies. Weight loss, one person has already lost 23 pounds in the first 6 weeks of our 12-week program. We've had remarkable improvements in people's energy levels. They're sleeping more soundly. Enlarged prostate shrunk. Aches and pains in the joints are down. Blood pressure is down. Glucose is down. So this is going to be one of the most successful health support groups we've ever had. At the conclusion of it, I'll bring some of the people on so they can share their own particularly insights. Now from our environment segment. This is from Dario Aranda, and it says, cancer danger in the GMO fields. A report by the Minister of Health in Cordoba on deaths from cancerous tumors shows that the highest rate of deaths occur in areas where GMO crops and agrochemicals are used. The rate is double the national average. The Minister of Health of Cordoba released a comprehensive report on cancer in the province. It documented 5 years of information, among other parameters, geographically determined the cases. The peculiarity which caused a major alarm is that the highest rate of deaths occur in the Pampa Gringa area, where most transgenic and agrochemicals are used, and where the death rate is double the national average. Quote, once again, what we have complained about for years has confirmed, and especially what doctors say about the sprayed towns and areas affected by industrial agriculture. Cases of cancer are multiplying as never before in areas with massive use of pesticides. And that is the member of the University Network of Environmental and Health Sciences down there. And so the report is entitled Report on Cancer in Cordoba 2004-2009, and it was prepared by the Provincial Tumor Registry and Department of Statistics and Census, and it was introduced into the legislature by the Minister of Health, Francisco Fortuna, and the Director of the Provincial Cancer Institute. So wouldn't you think that something that was this official, that took this much time, that had this many scientists and cancer experts and epidemiologists, that would get some attention in the American media? Someone would do a show on it because they're talking about GMO, genetically modified crops, and the pesticides, and having double the cancer rate. Not a word. Not a word. Well, this audience now has that word. And here's one of the problems. There are a lot of problems in California right now with water, drought. I just saw a documentary last night on the drought in California. And it's frightening because it shows that just a year ago, families had green lawns. The camera panned up this street. Every single lawn is just dirt, just dust. Everything is broken down. People lined up who are wanting to work have no work because all these millions of fruit trees are being destroyed. They have no water. So they're taking them out of the ground. And you just see these giant bulldozers just scooping up all these citrus trees. And then it shows a woman who has a hose that goes from a neighbor's property to hers, and just a small amount of water comes out, and it's not clean water. You can see the water as it's coming out into this bucket, but that's all the only water she has, and there she's washing her kid's hair with this dirty water, but there's no other water. And they have to buy their bottled water. And now there's all these people exploiting the demand for water by skyrocketing prices of water. The only water they have is water that someone goes to the store and buys. Do you realize how expensive that water becomes if you're a family of four or five? It's the water you have to wash with, clean your clothes with, cook with, drink, and bathe. Gets real expensive. That's just one of the problems. And it showed the major valley where all the food is grown, the Central Valley. and the San Waukegan Valley, and some of the richest soil in America. And they focused upon one farmer who is a fifth-generation farmer, and he showed what he grew, and it's beautiful produce. He had everything, you name it, garlic and onions and tomatoes and celery and citrus and grapes, grew it all. But now he's only able to grow one half his land because he doesn't have water for all of it. And you see another farmer is a sheep farmer, and you see all these sheep going up to a trough and there's no water, and then you just see them dying. And then you see a goat farmer, and he's a fourth-generation goat farmer. Hundreds of goats, they're dying, don't have water. So that's what's going on beyond the Upper West Side, Upper East Side, the Lower East Side, the Lower West Side of Manhattan, and all the other affluent communities that are just not aware. And here's one of the problems that those in California must be aware of today. This is from Common Dreams. Quote, California charged with rubber stamping pesticides linked to bee deaths. Attorney, unless halted, the use of these pesticides threatens not only the very survival of our pollinators, meaning the bees, but the fate of the whole ecosystem. Environmental groups today called out the state of California for illegally pushing new agricultural uses for certain pesticides despite mounting evidence they are devastating honeybee populations. A suit filed by Earth Justice charges that the California Department of Pesticide Regulation is rubber stamping the approval of new pesticides, particularly neonicotinoids or neonics, without first complying with laws enacted to ensure that they are safe. The Department of Pesticide Regulation has been saying for 5 years that neonicotinoid pesticides may be killing California's honeybees, and yet the agency allows more and more of these pesticides to be used each year, said Greg Laurier, an attorney at Earth Justice. The Department of Pesticide Regulation began a scientific review of neonics in response to overwhelming evidence that linked them to the pesticides to bee decline. The legal challenge, which was filed in the California Superior Court, the County of Alameda, demands that the court review the Department of Pesticide Regulations' June 13th decision to expand the use of two powerful neonics, venom insecticide, and another one, despite the office's still pending review of their impact on pollinators. Quote, unless halted, the use of these pesticides threaten not only the very survival of our pollinators, meaning bees, but the fate of the whole ecosystem. So what does this mean in lay language? It means that the lobbyists, the moneyed people from the pesticide industry, Big Ag, have managed to find friendly state legislators who then also find friendly supervisors within the departments to make sure that their pesticide, toxic as it is, a death blow to bees as it is still approved. So we, the public, and the bees and the other pollinators, we are no longer considered important. Making a profit for the company is. So why is this important? Because the largest almond groves in the world are in California. North of us, they start in the Ojai Valley, about an hour and a half north of Los Angeles. And they're having to kill thousands upon thousands of these trees because bee colony collapse, they're not pollinating, and you got to have bees if you're going to have almonds. So now they don't have the bees, they don't have enough, they're doing nothing about it, and now they're going to lose the vast, vast majority of your almonds. So you're going to be out of almonds in the next 5 years, I predict. You won't have any almonds in California, so to speak. All because of political hubris and knowing how to game the system to your advantage. There should be no chemical allowed in the environment unless it's been proven safe for animals, for the environment, for our water, our air, and humans. Today, it's just the opposite. Any chemical can be allowed in, then we, the public, have to prove that it's not safe And we can't do that because we don't have the money to do the studies to prove it. So just like the tobacco industry and the saccharin industry and the cyclamate industry, they just keep getting away with it. Here is a comment concerning 60 Minutes and the cancer industry. And also from John P. Thomas, Health Impact News. Cancer makes too much money to cure. Well, I would agree with that. And I remember when I got a call one day. I think context is important to this. I received a call, and it was from a man who I'd never met. His name was Pat McGrady, Jr., and he said that his father worked for the American Cancer Society, and he would like to meet with me. And he knew that I was working over at the Institute of Applied Biology, which was not far from Sloan Kettering. So could he meet one night? So I said, sure. So they came, the two of them. And Pat McGrady, Jr. turned out to have been the Newsweek bureau chief. He was an award-winning reporter. And his father was going to tell me the truth about the war on cancer. Now, at that time, no one had written any articles critical as such in a national publication against the cancer establishment. And what he told me was just horrific. And he told me that there had been a cancer cure by a group of physicians. He saw it. He was in the lab with them. And he was head of public relations for the American Cancer Society for a quarter of a century. So he gave me hours and hours and hours of taped interview on the record. And I interviewed the two people, and then it was a team of nine people who had cured cancer using a non-toxic, natural approach. And they even did it in front of a group of scientists. Then they did it at the National, the American Cancer Society's annual convention of where all the journalists go. And they did it in front of them, too. They injected a ascites tumor, and it disappeared in a matter of hours. And then it all came to a crashing halt. And then the people who have been involved in that discovery were vilified, lost all their grants, even though they had been funded by the Damon Runyon Fund and the U.S. Public Health Service. And they were all experienced in the field. They had published dozens and dozens of paper and peer-reviewed journals. They had done everything right. In fact, a member of their team was from the American Cancer Society, another was from Sloan Kettering. And the public didn't know any of this. So I was getting the scoop on this. And then Pat McGrady, I said, well, why don't you do it? It's your dad. You know, he said something to me that I didn't appreciate it until I saw the movie based upon Gary Webb and his life about the cocaine-contra truth connection, and his movie's called Kill the Messenger. And Gary took the information given to him, ran with it, and his whole career was destroyed. And it was destroyed by the New York Times, Washington Post, and Los Angeles Times, who didn't want this information getting out. They sided with the CIA. And the CIA was known to have had at least 500 people working in the media that were also working for the CIA, including the guy at the Washington Post who was leading the attack against Gary Webb and his allegations. In any case, so Pat says to me, he says, well, just understand something, Gary. I got to make a living. And if I broke this story, I'd never be able to work again. Why would I be able to do it? Well, you're different. You know, you have a very popular radio show, the most popular radio show right now in America. And you've got all these best-selling books, and you've got other source of income. I don't. And you're known for being a fighter. You get in everyone's face, and I can't. I said, okay. So it took me a year of in-depth research to verify and prove every single fact, and every single fact showed that the cancer establishment was nothing but one giant, completely corrupt, oozing tumor on the psyche of America. My God, they were brilliant in how they played everyone, how they controlled the media, how they controlled the oncologist, how they lied to the public, how they were self-serving, how their own foundations, their own universities got almost all the money for cancer research. The President's National Cancer Advisory Board. I challenged these people. I got them on the phone because no one had ever challenged before. Remember, at that time, we didn't have whistleblowers. We didn't have people challenging the grand dawns of American commerce. So I wrote an article on it. And Robert Houston worked with me on it. That's Gene Houston's brother. And it died. I mean, it was like nobody would touch it. Mother Jones, Ramparts, Atlantic, every single place, nobody wanted to touch because nobody wanted to go after the cancer establishment. So finally, a newspaper on the Upper East Side published it. And we won an investigative journalism award for it. And that was it. No one else would touch it. You didn't know that any such article had ever been written that exposed the whole shooting match. And then a guy called me one day and said, I read your article, and in our town, and I have a friend who's a publisher, a major publisher. Would you talk with him? So I said, all right. So we went over, and it was at Judy Garland's old townhouse on 67th Street. And I sat and talked with this man, this publisher, and everyone in there, all 12 people sitting at the table, his editor-in-chief, his managing editor, this big guy named Grupman, who was just the most obnoxious lawyer, that's kind of redundant, said, you'll never publish this in our magazine. And I said, I'm sorry, I thought it was Robert's magazine. And so in this very soft voice, this publisher says to me, do you really think this will save lives? And I said, sir, they're covering up treatments that have been shown and proven by any standard to reverse cancer. Yes, this will save lives. He said, then we're going to publish it. Man, the vitriol that came out at me, well, it not only got published, but it was in billboards all over and subway places, a segment on 60 Minutes, a segment which won an Emmy on 2020. It ended up being a 26-part series. So we not only went after him, we went after him with a passion. So ripping open the veils of lie, the cancer establishment's what I do. So it's something I know. I'm not talking as if I have no knowledge or experience in the field. And I will tell you unequivocally, absolutely, without hesitation, that the vast majority of treatments for cancer are not scientifically supported, that the vast majority of the chemotherapy agents used have not passed any form of gold standard, meaning they have not used a placebo and then used the treatment with the same type of cancer cross-match on a large group of people and followed them, that they almost always are using mathematical models or other chemotherapy agents, which are not a good indication, and they manipulate the numbers. They manipulate the days. In one case, a cancer treatment was approved that only gave a person 1.5 extra days of life, yet it was considered statistically significant because of how bad the other treatment was. But the public was never shown that, but we read the actual articles. And then I've had so many people within the cancer establishment, oncologists and surgeons, come forward and confirm these truths. So the next time anyone suggests that you have a therapy, fine, especially if it's surgery, because I do believe that surgery is a viable and legitimate treatment for cancer. But then say, I'm willing to do the therapy, but I want you to show me a quality study that this therapy you're giving me has actually saved lives. Then I want to speak with the people. I want to speak with the people to see what kind of cancer did you have, what stage was it, how long have you been on the therapy? What are the side effects? Have you seen what progress and quality of life? Then I'll have confidence to take it. Instead, most people are simply taking the word of the oncologist that it works. But science doesn't support it. I wished it did. Now, even the cheapest therapy that you're going to be able to find out there is $50,000 for a new drug per year. That's chump change, though, because that only gives the cancer establishment $83 billion in the first phase of your cancer therapy if you're the average person. That's not a lot of money to them. And then you can be paying a low end, very low, $4,500 a month if you're lucky. But then that price now has gone up to about $10,000. And now the newest drugs that they were talking about on 60 Minutes, it could be $35,000 per month per treatment. Talk about exploiting profits for pure unmitigated greed. And the oncologist is allowed, unlike any other doctor in any other field of medicine, they're allowed to profit directly. So this pure incentive. But let's look at a few facts that I think we should pay attention to. In 1985, Professor John Cairns from Harvard University published a study in Scientific America concerning the benefits of chemotherapy drugs. He stated, quote, aside from certain rare cancers, that would mean testicular cancer and clear cell adenoma, it is not possible to detect any sudden changes in the death rates from any of the major cancers that could be credited to chemotherapy. Whether any of the common cancers can be cured by chemotherapy has yet to be established. He also stated, quote, a 6 or 12 month course of chemotherapy not only is very unpleasant experience, but also has its own intrinsic mortality. Treatments now avert perhaps 2 to 3% of deaths from cancer that occur each year in the U.S. That means that there's a 98% failure rate, 98%. Now, mind you, what's the failure rate and the success rate using natural therapies like the Virginia Livingston Wheeler therapy, the Dr. Joseph Issel's therapy, Dr. Lawrence Burton therapy, the Dr. Stanislaw Brzezinski therapy, the detox therapies? Very high. But you'll never hear a word of that. 19 years later, in 2004, Australian researchers came to the same conclusion Dr. Cairns found, and this is what they stated, the new people, quote, the overall contribution of cytotoxic chemotherapy to five-year survival rates is estimated to be at 2.3% in Australia, 2.1% in the United States. In other words, little benefit is being obtained from the billions of dollars that are spent on chemotherapy. Okay, but these are not even accurate in any case. If you can say at the end of 5 years, we have been able to help 2.1% of the people, how do you know that that wasn't body-mind? How do you know they didn't change their diet? How do you know that they didn't start doing positive affirmations? There's no research on that. Just to say if they didn't die in 5 years, you have to give 100% of the credit after 5 years to the chemotherapy. It's unscientific. It's absurd. It is cultish. It is obscene. It is deadly. These people should be tried in courts against human rights. They should not be allowed to practice medicine. Pharmaceutical industry has a complete 100% hold on all of Congress, all medicine, all news media. And they live off fear. If they have good science to bring forward using double-blind placebo-controlled studies, long-term studies, let them do it. They don't have it, and therefore they use other scare techniques and saying we're the only one. Where does the money go when you see the pink ribbons and the marches and the marathons and the swimathons and the bikeathons? It goes always to maintaining a synthetic approach to cancer and funding the very large lifestyles, the foundations and the directors of those foundations. It doesn't go to saving lives. I call it pink washing when it comes to cancer. Here's the reality. Deal with the facts. Fact. Screening for mammography fails 99% of women. 30 years of breast screening, 1.3 million wrongly treated. Mammography appears to have created 1.3 million cases of cancer of the breast in the U.S. population. A study. Cholesterol-lowering statin drugs more than double breast cancer risk. Then why aren't you attacking statin drugs? Oh, because you manufacture them. New study shows sleeping pills linked to increased risk of death and cancer. And why birth control and artificially manipulating your hormones causes cancer. So just look at the conclusions. Look at the number of people dying. We'll have 550,000 people die of cancer this year. They'll all be toe-tagged. They will all have the convenience and the belief of going to their death that they didn't do anything their doctor didn't want. We didn't even think about changing our diet. We didn't even call a Gary Knoll because heaven help that we do something like that. We prayed at your altar, big medicine. The second largest morgue in America is Sloan Kettering. Now, if you're a father, a mother, a son, or a daughter, and you're so absolutely self-righteously, cultishly set that you're not going to allow a parent or a friend or a sibling to even know that there's an alternative therapy, what are you going to feel when you're looking down at a dead body? Are you going to say, we did the best we could, we looked in every avenue, we did everything possible? But you didn't, did you? That's why I say, our beliefs and fears control the outcome of our lives, and cancer is one of the worst to be abused. I'm Gary Knoll, back in a moment, and we're going to hear about civil forfeiture from John Oliver. I was talking about this in a very serious way. He makes a very important point, saying the same identical thing, that there's a multi-billion-dollar-a-year industry where the police are stopping completely innocent civilians and stealing their money and getting away with it, stealing their homes, stealing their cars, cashing them in, selling them. Now, this has nothing to do with that other side of beating people to death, shooting innocent people. More people are killed each week by police than killed in the last 5 years by terrorists in the United States. And that's just in 1 week. So, and they always get away with it. I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about the other thing they do. If they're not going to beat you to death, stun you to death, punch you to put in the face, kick you in the teeth, you know, crush your skull, and then say that they had to because they felt fearful. Well, then what about stealing from us? And yet we can't bring ourselves to say that we're a police state. Back in a moment with John Oliver.
They protect us, they serve us, and they provide us with an endless source of TV show one-liners.
Rock, paper, scissors.
Gun.
Well, I'm no Serena Williams, but I know one thing. It's all in the wrist.
Who'd want to cut your penis off?
Take a number.
Okay, now, you laugh, but admit it, you want to watch the rest of that episode right now. Now, look, public trust in the police is one of the most vital elements in a civilized society. But for many Americans, that trust has been undermined by a procedure called civil forfeiture. Now, I know it sounds like a Gwyneth Paltrow euphemism for divorce, but incredibly, it's actually even worse than that.
Civil asset forfeiture is really a mechanism by which the state and federal government can seize people's property without having to convict them of a crime. Most people can't afford to hire a lawyer to challenge it. It's really legalized robbery by law enforcement.
And think about it. That is a tough crime to report to the police. Give me a description of what the guy looked like. Well, to be honest, he looked a lot like the guy currently asking me what the guy looked like. And if you think this sounds bad, just wait until you see how it looks. Because the Washington Post recently published a major investigation featuring stories like that of this man, who was driving from Michigan to San Francisco with $2,400 in cash that his dad had lent him to start a new job when he was pulled over in Nevada.
I gave him my license and registration, and then as he was looking at that information, he asked me how much money I was traveling with.
Lee told him about the money his dad gave him, which he kept in the trunk.
He told me to turn on my air vents on high and roll up my windows and get out of the car because he was going to run a canine around it.
Dove didn't find drugs, but he did find the $2,400.
He said, no, I'm going to keep the money because I've concluded through my investigation here that you are traveling from Michigan to California to purchase drugs.
Wow. I mean, there is so much wrong there, including the fact that any policeman who genuinely believes you need to travel from Michigan to California to purchase drugs needs to be introduced to the concept of the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Okay? It's right there. And the problem is, stories like that are surprisingly common. In fact, since 9/11, under just one program, police have taken $2.5 billion in the course of over 61,000 seizures of cash alone from people who, and this is the mind-blowing part, were not charged with a crime. That is the sort of police behaviour that we laugh at other countries for, along with their accents and silly hats. The way civil forfeiture generally works is that if the police believe they have a preponderance of the evidence that suggests your property was or could be used in a crime, they may confiscate it. And it gets even weirder.
Many folks are unfamiliar with the idea of civil forfeiture, which is actually a case brought against directly against a piece of property where you don't need to be proven guilty of a crime for your goods to be taken away.
Exactly. You don't need to be charged with a crime because it's not you that's on trial, it's your stuff. That's why these cases have historically had eye-catching names, such as, and all of these are real, United States versus $8,850 in US currency, United States versus an article consisting of 50,000 cardboard boxes, more or less, each containing one pair of clacker balls, and United States versus approximately 64,695 pounds of shark fins, which must have been an amazing court case. And do you see those shark fins in the room right now? Yes! There they are! There they are! Let the record show the witness has pointed at roughly 65,000 pounds of shark fins. Guilty, guilty. And it's also worth noting that your possessions generally have fewer protections under the law than you do.
Under civil forfeiture laws, your property is guilty until you prove it innocent.
How can that be possible? At this point, I'm surprised objects don't have their own civil rights leader, like Martin Scooter King or Harvey Carton of Milk. Now, to be fair, civil forfeiture laws have had some positive consequences. They've crippled powerful drug traffic organisations, thwarted criminals, and returned billions of dollars to victims. The problem is that many police departments are allowed to keep most or all of the money they seize. And knowing that starts to make you wonder about the motivations of these kinds of questions.
Is there any large amounts of cash in the vehicle?
Are there any large sums of money over $5,000 in cash in the vehicle?
How much money you got?
Are you large amounts of U.S. currency in
there? I'll take whatever cash you got in there, and is that a Slurpee in the cup holder? What flavour? Grape? Never mind. Do you know what? I will take it. I'll take it. The question, do you have cash in the vehicle, is surprisingly common in traffic stops, and the police are prepared to overcome any language barrier to ask it.
Tiene mucho, mucho dinero en su truck y trailer?
Let's be clear. He just said, "Tenny mucho, mucho dinero in su trucky trailer." Which sounds like an alien's first attempt to communicate with humans after crash landing in a Taco Bell. In fact, let's all just pause for a moment to enjoy that sentence, because every single word of it is funny. First, Tenny, pronounced incorrectly. Mucho, one of the few words he knows in Spanish. Mucho, repeated word. De Niro, a famed actor. In, a rapid shift to English. Sue, rapid shift back to Spanish. Trucky trailer. Trucky trailer. Now, it's magnificent. That is magnificent. It's a work of art. Now, this happened in Tennessee, a state where local law enforcement authorities are allowed to keep as much as 100% of the proceeds from civil forfeitures. A local news investigation found multiple troubling cases of people having money seized, such as George Reby, who had $20,000 seized after he was stopped for speeding. The police officer argued it was drug money, despite the fact that Reby had a pretty good explanation.
I told them I had active bids on eBay that I was trying to buy a vehicle, and they just didn't want to hear it.
Inspector Reby had proof on his computer, but the Monterey officer drew up a damning affidavit citing his own training that common people do not carry this much U.S. currency.
And did he tell you that he was trying to buy a car?
He did.
But you did not include that in your report.
If it's not in there, I didn't put it in there.
So why would you leave that out?
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know? I expect a better answer from a police officer than a four-year-old who just spilled grape juice on the couch. What happened to your drink? I don't know. If it's not in my glass, it's not in my glass. I don't know. I don't know. And look, it's not always just a roadside stop. In 2008, police raided the Contemporary Art Institute of Detroit during its funk night because it didn't have a liquor license, seizing 44 cars under the argument that simply driving vehicles to the location of an unlawful sale of alcohol was sufficient to seize a car. Which means you may as well seize any car driven by any teenager on prom night because they are all going to Chad's place. Chad's got the hookup. We actually managed to get the security video of that Detroit raid, and you can see the police burst in and arrest people with the disco lights still swirling in the single funkiest shakedown in human history. They each had to pay $900 to get their cars out of the impound, with the exception of the one person whose car was actually stolen from the lot to which it had been towed, which seems like the sort of thing the police should be investigating if they weren't too busy raiding art gallery funk nights. And at this point, you may be thinking, well, sure, the police departments are getting a lot of money from seizing stuff, but I'm sure there are limitations on how they can spend it. Well, allow me to take you to a 2012 Columbia, Missouri Citizen Police Review Board hearing.
How do you decide forfeiture funds?
You know, it's usually based on a need. Well, I'll take that back.
Discretion, though, I'd imagine you sign off on.
Yeah, there's some limitations on it. You know, it's actually, there's not really on the forfeiture stuff.
Actually, there's basically no limitations at all, come to think of it.
So that gives you an idea how bad it is. And he said it in a very funny way, and we can all appreciate the humor. My suggestion, if you have any money above $50, don't drive through Tennessee, Kentucky, West Virginia. Of course, you might get mated in West Virginia with someone. If they got 14 toes on one foot, stay away from them. That's my home state. The only state in America where everyone's mother and father were once brother and sister. But I'm not critical of them. So just realize if you're out there with cash, they can take it. Then again, if they like your car, they can take your car. By the way, they've taken over 10,000 cars. And someone suddenly is driving your car. You've committed no crime. None. That's what the message is. They can take your house. They've taken over 1,000 houses. And then they sell them. And you have no rights. So keep that in mind. For the remainder of our show, we're going to open our lines for TalkBack, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. We have a lot more coming this week, every day. Tomorrow I'll be doing a review of the major media being complicit with the CIA to cause Gary Webb to lose his career after he became the most important journalist of the year, won the Pulitzer Prize, won Outstanding Journalist of the Year, and his own newspaper threw him under the bus. How the movie I saw, I wouldn't recommend to anyone. Worst movie of the year, in my opinion, was the movie they did on Gary Webb, and I'm going to be highly critical of it. Normally, I don't give film reviews, but since I knew Gary, since he was a friend, man, did they distort what was in that film from the truth. But I'll give you that on an upcoming show. In studio right now is Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. I'm suddenly happy I'm driving a very old Subaru. I'm always amazed at the emails that I get from people that saw you 10, 15, 20 years ago, and they are emerging, and they send me emails. It's absolutely amazing. Anyway, this one's from Laverne from Los Angeles. And she said, I came to hear you lecture about 18 years ago. And she said, based on your history, I thought it was going to be a quiet health lecture. And instead, she said, it rocked. It was very inspirational, and it got me on the right track. My question for you is this. I noticed in the front row were a number of celebrities, people like Smokey Robinson, Isaac Kennedy, Phyllis George. My question to you is this. They all look great. Were they on your protocols?
Yes. Yeah, there were probably 60, 70 well-known people there. I had them all on protocols, and I haven't been in touch with all of them in a while, but last time I was, they were sticking with the protocols, and they're, you know, understand a lot of the people. Let's just take one example. The whole Detroit music scene, a lot of that evolved from the clubs, the jazz clubs, the rhythm and blues clubs. What was that environment? Lots of drugs, lots of smoking, lots of alcohol, and so you pay a price for that. Not when you're 20 or 25 or 30, but the older you get, the more that price is going to come. That's why so many of the people of that era are sick or dead. Mm-hmm. So one day you wake up and you realize you want to extend your career, or you want to have a quality of life, or you don't want to leave this planet this early. And then you look for help, and if you're wise, you get the help, and then you apply it, and you live a longer life. So a lot of those people were living a longer life, yeah. But that's true of an awful lot of the people. A lot of people today who are well-known are following a healthy lifestyle. They do so in a quiet way. They don't bring any attention to themselves. They probably motivate and inspire the people in their family or friends. And we're always happy when someone who's older chooses a healthier life. And we see it. We see it in their energy, their weight, their muscle. They begin to de-age. And we can all do it, even if you're 90 years old. So you should be chronically optimistic.
I am.
Good. Well, we're up to the limits of our program. I want to thank you all for joining us, and I look forward to sharing more on tomorrow's program.